Well, we want to spend a few minutes today looking at red meat. Those who love it say it's a healthy source of protein. Those who don't say it's actually unhealthy. A report this week linked meat to diabetes. Other studies have cited links to colon cancer. But what's not disputed is the environmental impact of meat. A single burger requires 2,500 liters of water to produce. 35 kilograms of greenhouse gases are released for every kilo of beef consumed. So for a long time, meat substitutes left a lot to be desired. Glenn Zorpet is executive editor of IEEE Spectrum magazine, and he's now looking into the new world of meat substitutes, things like HMMAs. Glenn, HMMAs?
It's high moisture meat analog. It's kind of a new thing on the fake meat scene. It's produced with fairly advanced form of a food technology called extrusion. And the technique was actually invented in the 80s in France, but there's been a heck of a lot of work on it in the past 20 or 30 years. There were a lot of patents just in the last few years as inventors tinkered with it, and there are now a couple of products on the market. They're raising quite a lot of hype and interest.
We understand the technology has advanced so that you don't just have the process of extrusion, but you have the twin-screw thermoplastic food extruder.
Exactly. Well said. extrusion is actually a very, very old technology. It goes back about 200 years. It was used centuries ago to produce things like wire and pipe. In the 1930s, people started using it for food. So in the 1930s, you started seeing things like spaghetti produced with extrusion, followed quickly by breakfast cereals.
What is it? How do you extrude something?
Basically, it's if you recall as a toddler, you might have played with a toy called the Play-Doh Fun Factory. You put Play-Doh in a little container and you push down with a lever and it comes out through a hole, maybe shaped like a star or something like that. That is extrusion in its most basic and purest form. Now, in a modern extruder, food extruder, that dough-like substance is pulled through a tube by a long screw. And the most advanced forms of these extruders actually have two screws that rotate, kind of mesh together, and they pull a dough through this tube. And while they're doing that, they transform the food, much like cooking transforms food. Extrusion is, in some sense, a form of cooking because there's a lot of friction generated by those spinning augers that creates heat. And as I said, friction, and there are forces on it, and it transforms the proteins, starches, and other things in the doughy substance.
And what's in that doughy substance? What's in HMMAs?
Okay, an HMMA is a very specific thing, so your dough would be very sort of finely tailored for that. What it would typically be, and a lot of these companies are very secretive. These recipes are guarded very carefully, but as near as I can tell from having looked at some patents and other things, they use soy protein isolates, and they will also use fat and water and flavorings, and they will also use other kinds of protein. Those undergo a transformation which basically gives them, at the end, when it comes out the other end, a texture of meat, a sort of layered, fibrous kind of springiness that meat has.
So have you tasted HMMAs?
I have. The two big ones on the market now, there's an American one called Beyond Meat, and there's one made in the Netherlands called Plenty. And I've tried them both. I was amazed at the texture. The texture just simply blew me away, how similar it was to chicken. Now, the flavor, I think, wasn't quite there as much for the Beyond Meat product, the American one. Beyond Meat is sold in most Whole Foods supermarkets in three flavors. The Plenty I had, the Plenty is the Dutch product, it was unflavored. The way that product is sold in Europe is it's sold to retailers unflavored, and then the retailers flavor it and sell it. But I was stunned at how both of these texturally resembled chicken.
You say there are three different waves of attempts. Go through them for us.
Well, back in the 70s, there was sort of a tofu generation where they basically treated the tofu to resemble meat. Then the next generation was based on what's called TVP, texturized vegetable protein. If you are an habitué of health food stores, you'll generally find a bin of TVP that you can buy by the scoop or by the ounce or something. TVP is also made by extrusion. Some of the most popular products out there, Morningstar Farms burgers and things like that, are made with TVP. And this third wave believe now, are the HMMAs. And there's more to come. There's a Stanford professor who has started a company. He's being very secretive.
In fact, it's a Silicon Valley startup.
Exactly. It's a classic Silicon Valley startup. He has some DNA technologies to his credit. He's also a vegan. And what is known is that he's doing fake meat based on vegetable protein. So he's not doing anything involving in vitro or test tube meats or anything like that.
But other people are. Talk to us about growing meat in vitro.
Okay, this has been a decades-long quest. NASA funded some work on this in the 80s, I believe it was, and I think it might even go back farther than that. Meat is a muscle. That's what meat is. With a little bit of fat, of course, because that's the way muscle is. And in fact, Winston Churchill had some ideas about this, and he wondered why we can't just make meat in a laboratory.
Well, more to the point, he said, why are we taking chickens and growing all of these chickens just so we could take their chicken breast?
Exactly. And so there's been this long quest for this. People actually started trying to do it several decades ago, and as I first became aware of it as a science writer in the 90s when I came across some work that NASA was funding on Long Island. That work eventually just died out when NASA decided that it wasn't practical, but hope springs eternal.
As we're going to hear with Glenn Zorpet, executive editor of IEEE Spectrum magazine, who's looked deep into the world of meat substitutes. How about you? Have you looked beyond tofu, or are you a meat eater just trying to cut back a little bit? Let us know at hereandnow.org what you've tried. And we'll have more with Glenn in 1 minute, here and now. Welcome back. We're talking about new meat substitutes, and there's interest primarily because of the environmental impact of raising meat. Glenn Zorpet is with IEEE Spectrum magazine. And Glenn, you were mentioning NASA's attempts in the 90s to develop meat in a lab. Now, others are picking up that challenge. Tell us what's happening in the Netherlands.
There is a man named Mark Post. He's a medical doctor and a bioresearcher at the University of Maastricht in the Netherlands, and he found an anonymous billionaire, it's believed that it's an American, who funded some work that he's doing. The idea was that he was going to make the world's first synthetic hamburger. Now, it may not sound like a big deal, but no one has ever made more than tiny, tiny bits of fake meat. And the reason why it's so hard is because this is actual meat, and so it's actual animal muscle that's grown in a laboratory, and we only know one way to grow muscle, that is through hormones and exercise. As animals grow, they get larger, their bodies flow with hormones, and those hormones, along with other stimulation, produces muscle, and the muscle expands and gets larger. So the way you make fake in vitro meat or test tube meat is you start with basically tissue culture, muscle culture, and you have to grow it using things like hormones and stimulation. Now, the estimate is that this hamburger is going to cost $330,000. So the idea was that he was going to finish this hamburger, and then there was going to be a big press conference where the anonymous American billionaire would announce who he is and eat the hamburger. He was supposed to finish it, I believe, last winter. That didn't happen, so they pushed the deadline a month or two. That didn't happen, they pushed it again. So now they're no longer releasing deadlines. But people are thinking that it's going to be any week now. I would think certainly by the end of the summer, we're finally going to have this huge press conference, and we're going to have this billionaire eating the world's first fake hamburger.
He may eat that hamburger, but he's going to run across the stigma against fake food. You have so many stats in your article. I mean, we already mentioned that one of the reasons things have to change is the environmental impact of animals. They take up more than 26% of the land area on the planet. They eat valuable crops. They take huge quantities of water. They produce greenhouse gas, methane. Then there are those who object to the slaughter of thousands of animals. It's another reason people back coming up with an alternative. But you say there really, at some point, isn't going to be a choice. There's a sort of an exponential math at work here.
Exactly. There's a roughly 26% of the usable land on this planet, that is to say the ice-free land on this planet, is given over to raising livestock. And you can think of those livestock as a means of converting vegetable protein to animal protein. That's basically what they do. And they're not very efficient at doing that. And of all of the livestock, cows are the least efficient. The numbers are sobering, but these are numbers that have been determined by organizations such as the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, the FAO, and others. So these aren't partisan numbers from the anti-meat folks. And as I say, they're staggering. And it's not just the water use. Animals create a lot of methane. And methane is an enormously powerful greenhouse gas. It's a much more powerful greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide is. The estimates of how much greenhouse gas comes from livestock and the meat industry, the lowest figures I've seen were in the neighborhood of 18 or 20%. And the highest figures, which I've been seeing more recently, are that about half of the greenhouse gases on this planet come from livestock in the meat industry.
Well, so that's what meat production does now. And by the way, we're going to hear from people who raise beef who do it in a lovely way, in a compassionate way, in a, they think, a sustainable way, because they're maybe free-ranging or using grasses. But the point you and others make is that meat consumption is only going to go up. There are entire countries just starting to eat meat, and the world's population is growing to 9 billion people.
Right. Typical large factory farm meat operations feed cows things like soybeans and corn, which cows didn't evolve to eat. Cows evolved to eat grass. So when you feed them things like soybeans and corn, that makes them grow faster, and you get the meat, the muscle and the meat faster, which is what the meat industry wants, but you also produce much more methane because the cows belch a lot more. But regardless of that, it is true. The world ate something like 302 million metric tons of meat last year. In 2050, when population is supposed to hit something like 9 billion, that figure is predicted to rise to 465 million metric tons of meat. And it's only driven partially by population growth. I mean, the bigger growth is that disposable incomes are going up in places like China. And when we see that when that happens, people want to eat the way we do in the West. They want meat. Can the world produce 465 million metric tons of meat per year? I spoke to the environmentalist Vaclav Smil, and he says, well, we probably could. But when you look at the greenhouse gas rates, the amount of the planet that would have to be given over to raising these quantity of animals, the amount of water that have to be used, it's a very sobering thing indeed.
Well, and he also said that it's not as if everyone who loves their meat has to stop immediately. He says if just 5% of meat is swapped out for vegetable protein, it would make a huge difference environmentally.
Yes, it's not necessarily an all or nothing proposition. I mean, people don't have to become vegans or even vegetarians. I mean, we have this phenomenon of meatless Mondays. I myself am just eating meat at lunch, and I find I don't really miss it other times of the day. There's another interesting phenomenon, which is that by law, meat served in the National School Lunch Program can be up to 30% vegetable protein, and it typically is. So you have these soy and other vegetable extenders, and they do it obviously for financial reasons, but it therefore means that right away you're eating less meat. Studies have shown that you can extend meat by up to 30% with vegetable protein such as soy, and there's a new one in Europe based on pea protein, and people don't notice a thing.
That's Glenn Zorpet, executive editor of IEEE Spectrum magazine. He investigated the idea of faux meat in two articles, Muscling Out Meat and Half-Baked Ideas for Improving the Food Supply. We'll link it here in now.org. Glenn, thanks as always.
My pleasure.
And again, we'd love your thoughts on meat substitutes. Is there something you're trying that we haven't mentioned? Let us know at hereandnow.org. Coming up, we'll listen to Kanye West's new CD. That's later in the program, but the latest news is next, Here and Now.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. The ICA with Barry McGee. Vibrant paintings and installations capture the energy of the street in this 20-year retrospective on view now. ICABoston.org. And Harvard University, whose Harvard Summer School offers courses for high school, college, and adult students to earn academic credit and experience Harvard campus life. Summer.harvard.edu.